The Veritas Radio Network and the Crusade Channel present Kurt Wallace's The Flow. Real interviews with real people revealing real truths. Heard exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade Channel and available online at veritasradionetwork.com. Radio, the way it should be.
Presented by Veritas Radio Network, I'm Kurt Wallace, and this is The Flow. Our guest today is Barbie Engel, president of the International Pain Foundation and former head coach at Washington State University. She has a degree in social psychology from George Mason University, and she also has a new reality show, Extreme Time Cheaters, on TLC. She sits down with me to discuss her life, born in Thailand, to an American military family. She shares about her incredible success building a national cheerleading and training performance company, which led to her being recruited by a prestigious college. Married and on top of the world, her story suddenly changes forever. She explains being afflicted with a rare disease, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, triggered by an auto accident, which led to a bottom physically, mentally, and spiritually, rendering her financially helpless, divorced, and alone. With the physical pain that she endured, she then describes how God transformed her world in unexpected ways. Becoming an international voice for the community of pain management, an author of several books on the subject, strengthening relationships with her family, garnering support from many celebrities, and her new husband, Ken Taylor, who she met while being treated for RSD, is a story you should not miss. This is an interview you won't hear anywhere else. And Barbie, thanks for spending time with us today on The Flow.
Oh, I'm so excited that you asked me to be here and glad to be here to share.
Well, Barbie, before we get into your life and some of the questions that I've got for you, let's talk about how you've gotten to the point where you are now in terms of what happened. You were faced with a condition, a syndrome. How did that happen and what is the syndrome? Could you go through your story from that standpoint?
Yes. In 2002, I was in a minor car accident, and I was living my dream prior to that. We can go into that a little bit later. But this eight-second car accident, it was very minor. The guy actually hit me from behind. He was driving a 16-passenger van. I was sitting still in my car. And that 8 seconds changed my life. And I actually had a neuroautoimmune disease called reflex sympathetic dystrophy. And that disease is in your body. It's in our blood, but it wasn't triggered until the accident. It's triggered by an accident or trauma to your body or even something your body perceives as a trauma. So even though my car accident was minor, my body perceived it as if I had been hit by somebody going 100 miles an hour. And they thought it was whiplash at first, and it actually took almost 3 years to get a proper diagnosis of reflex sympathetic dystrophy and to figure out what was going on. In that three-year period, I went through 43 doctors. The 43rd doctor was the one to finally get it correct. All different backgrounds and specialties because the disease was attacking my body. I had a rib removed because I had a lack of blood flow to my brain on the right side of my body because of all of the swelling from the RSD, but they thought it was because my rib was in the way all of a sudden. And that doctor made a mistake, which led to a string of additional traumas and complications. And every time I went through the surgeries, I did a shoulder surgery, two rib surgeries, I had tumors growing in my mouth from a medication. So everything during that three-year period that could go wrong went wrong, and led it to spreading to full body RSD, reflex sympathetic dystrophy, and left me basically bedbound. And when I did get out of bed, I was in a wheelchair.
This is incredible. So in terms of your experience with this syndrome, this disease, there must have been tremendous confusion along the way. Can you talk about what you were experiencing there?
Sure. Like I said, 43 doctors, every time I would go to a doctor, I would put all my hope and trust in that doctor and say, this is the doctor who is going to make me better. And the doctor would say, do this and you'll get better. And each of them were looking at a specific symptom that I was having. And that's what syndrome is, a collection of symptoms. So they were each looking at their area of expertise. So my heart or my lungs or my intestines or the chronic burning fire pain that I lived with on a daily basis. Instead of looking at me as a whole person and figuring out the big picture of what was going on. So I was extremely confused and searching for answers and trying to make sense of, am I crazy? Or did I just lose my whole life and how do I get it back? And it really makes you question your psychological balance, your spiritual beliefs, everything in your life. I mean, I had a dream life, and I went from that to living on food stamps, to losing my house, to losing my 10-year marriage, to the lowest that I ever could be, that I never even imagined that I would be there. And I've had to fight and work my way back and figure out the medical system and how to get through it. And most of that was done on my own. I eventually did get remarried. I ended up with my husband buying a house, being able to drive again. But it took me becoming my own best advocate and learning how to become my own best advocate to be able to get to the point where I am at now.
Let's talk about what your life was before. Where did you grow up? Let's talk about that part of Barbie Engel.
I was actually born in Bangkok, Thailand. Both of my parents were military. My mom's a colonel and my dad was a major. So I lived there until I was just about 4 years old. So I have a few memories, but not too many. And I have an older brother and an older sister and a younger brother. We moved back from Thailand to Virginia, and I grew up in Virginia, in Northern Virginia, and basically lived the all-American life. Military parents. Luckily, when my mom was out of town or deployed, my dad would be in the country or in the state. So we didn't have to, as children, move a lot, so we didn't have that moving experience. But we did live outside of Army base and did have that military-type lifestyle. We got to do everything that we wanted to do, gymnastics, cheerleading, dance, everything, track team, soccer, baseball, whatever we wanted to do, play, the activities we wanted to be involved with, we got to do. And I remember I started cheerleading and dance and gymnastics when I was 4. Mm. And when I was about 12, I told my dad, I want to be a cheerleader when I grow up. And he was like, you know, that's not a job. You have to do something else. And I said, no, I want to be a cheerleader. That's what I want to do. I love this. This is what I'm meant to do. And ended up going to college at George Mason University. I got a degree in social psychology, which I wanted to get a degree in dance. And my dad said, no, you have to get a degree in something that can actually make you money. And so I minored in dance and got a degree in social psychology. But I really wanted to pursue dancing and cheerleading in that career. 4 days after college graduation, I started my own cheerleading and dance training company in Washington State. I literally got on a plane and moved to Washington State. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I met my husband in college, and that's where he wanted to go. So we moved there, and day two after moving to Washington, we happened to live near a high school, choose a place near a high school, and the cheerleaders were out practicing, and I went and watched them, and they were very, very bad. And I said, I got to do something. And 2 days later, I had brainstormed my company and what I wanted to do, went down, applied for a business license, and started my own cheer and dance training company. So it all happened very fast, and started sending out ads and had my first couple of schools as clients within a month, and started coaching and cheering or teaching people how to cheer. In the state of Washington, and the business eventually grew, and we covered the whole West Coast and part of Canada. And a year after I started the company, the head cheerleading coaching position at Washington State University came open, and it was the first time they were hiring a cheerleading and dance coach. It was the all-in-one, they called it the Spirit Program, and I actually ran the mascot program as well, and I applied for the position and got the position. So then I had my company going, and I had my head coaching position at Washington State. We started competing in national competitions. We are in the top five rankings for Division 1A small co-ed teams. And living my life, I got to coach at two of the Rose Bowls and also the Sun Bowl, which the Rose Bowl, there's been less than 100 cheerleading coaches that have ever even got to be on the field that were there for the Rose Bowl and coaching during the Rose Bowl, and I got to do that twice, so it's a pretty amazing experience. But my business was doing very well, so I would take my cheerleaders for away games. I would rent a limo and take them all to dinner and do fun things like that because I didn't have children of my own. So my teams that I was coaching were my kids, and I would, you know, treat them to the lifestyle things that they would have experiences to remember for the rest of their life. And really, that's what I always wanted to do, and that's what I created for myself, and it was amazing.
Now, you're very disciplined. You grew up in a military family, and do you think that carried over into this part of your life, the career that you had? I mean, it seems like that's been part of who you are the whole time, but I want to kind of get a sense of how you operated, how you functioned as a businesswoman and just in your general life before this accident occurred.
I am very disciplined. I take personal responsibility, time management, and organization very seriously in life. And it's something that I probably got from my parents, especially my mom. My mom, we saw her do five activities and do them all well at the same time, so we knew it could be done. And so it wasn't a matter of, do I have to learn how to do this? We just saw how it was done and were able to do that. As well as being involved in sports, not just cheerleading and dance, but all the track and soccer and other Girl Scouts. I became a cadet, which is equivalent to a Eagle Scout for Boy Scouts. It's really something that has been a part of me my whole life. And that's one of the things is when I got RSD and sick, prior to RSD, I got endometriosis, and which is mostly a female issue, but where your uterus lining grows inside and can attach to some of your organs and such and cause severe pain and issues. And I got through that and thought, oh, wow, you know, I got through that pain. I can overcome anything. I never expected that there was something worse in life than endometriosis, which RSD is very, very painful. It's like someone put lighter fluid on you. I had to take those skills that I learned through the military and my parents, as well as through my sport activities, and turn those into getting me through this chronic pain experience where you think that there's nothing that can't be overcome, and all of a sudden you're in a position where you can't get up and cheer. I used to tell my kids, they would be like, I sprained my ankle, coach. And I'd be like, suck it up. Get it wrapped. Get back out here. We need you.
Right.
It's the military-like. And if I went back to coaching now, having gone through the experience that I have with reflex sympathetic dystrophy, I would be a different coach for sure. And I definitely would understand injury and awareness and taking care of yourself first. You have to put your own oxygen on before you can help the person next to you. And that's one of the things that did change in becoming someone who lives with a chronic pain disease.
Let me ask you this. During that time, you were busy. There was a lot going on. Did you ever slow down and just consider your life at all? Or was it after this accident where it was like, oh,
I took life for granted. Okay. I thought I will be a cheerleader the rest of my life. I will be physical. I will be doing back tucks and cartwheels and getting thrown in the air and for the rest of my life. I could see myself at 80 still doing the splits and stunts. And I never saw anything different. I took everything for granted. I was just, this is what I did. I earned it. So why not just be in that moment? I wasn't preparing for my future. I wasn't preparing for, what if I can't do what I do to make a living? What am I going to do then? You know, like I said, I went from being on top of the world and taking limo rides and having a hairstylist travel with me so that my hair and makeup always looked good, to literally having food stamps and nothing.
You know, it's interesting. This show is about facing ourselves and in some ways recognizing and seeing through the ego and realizing what really is important and what's valuable for us. Unfortunately, for myself and you and many others, we have to be faced with adversity or struggle or our own mortality. There's a variety of things that you know, mental anguish, physical anguish, to move beyond that, to realize, wait, what really does matter? And I want to get into this, but in terms of setting this up, what was your relationship with your family, for instance, prior to the accident?
Well, prior to me, I mean, my family's always been close.
Mm-hmm.
I was closest with my siblings and my dad. My mom, like I said, she would be doing five things at once.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't as close with her because she was accomplishing all these life living. she was in the military. She also was the head of the Virginia State Health Department. She, during the Bush administration, was asked to be on the HIV/AIDS Council and wrote a book on that.
Wow.
She was constantly doing all these other things. So I had that influence and knew that I could do all the things that I wanted to do. I thought I could forever until I got sick. But with my siblings, we have always been close since day one. We're kind of like the Mickey Mouse Club. We did everything together. We were there supporting it. My brother had a baseball game. The other three of us were there at his game. If I was cheering at an event, my brother played football, so he would be on the field and I would be on the sidelines cheering him on.
Mm-hmm.
My sister and I did gymnastics together. We, you know, even though we were a year apart and looked nothing alike, she and I were raised as if we were twins, and so we've remained close through everything. When I first got sick, they did struggle a little bit.
Really?
And you know, what's happening to Barbie and why is this happening? And question, is this something like some mental disease that just came on? Because, you know, they knew I wouldn't just walk away from the life I made and worked for. But it's hard to comprehend that something could be so debilitating and painful that you just aren't able to get out of bed. You aren't able to do the things that you had done your whole life. And so they did have an adjustment struggle period, but they were also there to support me at the same time.
You know, I could see that happening just as a normal human reaction, that maybe this is some kind of a psychological disorder to be able to justify or explain what's going on when somebody has this type of pain, when they have this neurological
disorder. Absolutely. And in the beginning, I didn't have words for what I was going through. It's a totally new experience, bad experience, negative experience, and I was such a positive cheerleader. In cheerleading, you learn to keep smiling and keep going and have hope until the game is over. And even if you're losing 50-0, you still keep cheering. And my dad would say, how are you guys down there smiling when your team's losing so bad? And it's like, because that's our job. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to keep going. And then when you run into a brick wall, you get stunned. It takes a moment or sometimes years to overcome that and get around it or get over it or get under it or realize that you can't even go past the bounds that you placed on yourself, sometimes even subconsciously. You think, this is the bounds and this is what I am and this is what I do. And I had to recreate who I am, what I do, what's important. You know, human connection is the most important thing, and I know that now, mm-hmm. but I didn't know that prior to.
Well, in terms of the cheerleading experience, there's parts of it that are creative. It's a physical activity. I'm sure that there was a bit of a meditative state to it. There's that experience where you get to lose yourself and something really powerful in that.
Absolutely. When you're on the field, especially at a college football game, and there's 75,000 people in the crowd, and you can point your finger or your pom-pom towards one side of the crowd, and they know to yell go, and then you point the other way, and they yell Cougs, and you go back and forth, and you're leading 75,000 people. That is an amazing feeling.
Mm.
So, yeah, it definitely being out and performing, even if I didn't even have the right thing to say, being in front of a lot of people felt good.
And then suddenly you're going through this debilitating experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to get into this more, but before we do that, let's you were married before this accident happened.
Yes.
And would you be willing to talk about that?
Sure. Well, I'm remarried. Just want to point that out. Mm-hmm. But I got married straight out of college, graduated. Mm-hmm. I actually started my business before I got married, mm-hmm. at the time. And I was supposedly the good wife. I never complained in the just under 10 years that we were married. We didn't have a fight until it was over.
Mm.
I did what my husband told me to do. I thought I was following the Bible and what God wanted, but I actually married somebody who didn't believe in God, so I got ridiculed a lot for believing, and I thought, I have enough faith for both of us.
Wow.
It turned out that's not true. I needed someone more yoked with me in spiritual beliefs, and he didn't beat me or hit me or hurt me, but he didn't have the same drive. He didn't have the same wants in life. And I tried to just be the best wife I could be. My one flaw was that one of my flaws is that I don't cook, but I had enough money, so we ate out all the time. Mm-hmm. My husband didn't have to work because I made enough for both of us. But in the very end, we talked for a little bit, and one of the things he said to me was, I never wanted to be in cheerleading. I never, he would help out at summer camp, and he would help out at cheerleading competitions, and he never complained the whole time we were married, just like I never complained the whole time we were married. We weren't communicating.
Mm.
And turned out that he didn't like the cheerleading world, and he didn't want to be a part of it, and he says he was just doing it because that's what I did, and that's how I made the money for the family. So, communication is really important. Now, my husband and I, we're Ken and Barbie, so that's our name. So it's kind of cool that that's our name. It's a great icebreaker, especially with the charity work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I knew going into my second marriage was I'm going to speak up and I'm going to have my opinion, and it's okay if we don't have the same opinion. I don't have to pretend to like all the things that he likes, and I don't have to expect him to like what I like, and that's okay.
Communicating. You're being real with each other. And
absolutely. Yeah. Being real with each other instead of having this fake marriage and smile till the game's over. It's, you go through ups and downs and you want to stick it out. But my first marriage, I wouldn't say that there was a lot of ups and downs. It was flat.
Mm.
But we both weren't being real because we both weren't talking about this is what I like, this is what I don't like.
There's true value and real vulnerability in that kind of honesty. Barbie, we're going to have to take a break. We'll be back on the flip side of the break. You're listening to The Flow with Kurt Wallace. Our special guest, Barbie Engle.